Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. We start with good news, Jim, and given everything that's happening with Syria, this didn't get a ton of attention, but we certainly hope that people in the state of Virginia know this story, because in a race between Ken Cuccinelli and Terry McAuliffe, you can get bogged down on various allegations, their different education and economic plans. This story of how Cuccinelli personally got involved with a convict, a wrongly convicted convict, that is, named Thomas Hainsworth, who was sentenced for two rapes and an abduction, shows a side of Cuccinelli that I think a lot of people, certainly the undecideds, probably have never seen.
In late 2010, Democrat Kamel's attorney told me that he had this case that he thought I should take a look at. And he said, look, I think this guy might be innocent.
I never thought that, you know, the attorney general himself and who would be involved in a case like this.
After going through all of the evidence, I was convinced that Thomas Hainsworth was innocent. And I took that case on myself.
He didn't have to get involved, you know what I'm saying? But he seen the injustice was done. He tried to correct it.
Thomas Hainsworth was released from prison this week.
Convicted on several rape charges despite his innocence.
Spent 27 years behind bars for crimes he did not commit.
Attorney General's job is not convictions. It's justice. Today, we got justice.
Jim, any way you cut it, that's a powerful, powerful story and shows that Ken Cuccinelli is not just an ideologue. He is for what's right.
I actually have a piece on Cuccinelli. It's going to run in the magazine, hopefully, in the near future. And I'd actually talked to some Virginia Republicans who basically had pointed to this case and said, look, this is exactly the kind of story that Cuccinelli should be telling to voters. And they were kind of wondering why he hadn't run ads on it already. You know, African Americans, by and large, you know, vote overwhelmingly for Democrats. And a guy like Terry McAuliffe is going to count on winning the African American vote by a 90-10 ratio. And a story like this makes the traditional narrative of, oh, mean, nasty Republicans are mean and nasty to African Americans. It repels that you know, traditional Democrat narrative. How mean and heartless can this be? Cuccinelli comes out and says explicitly what you really want to hear a prosecutor say, which is his job is not convictions, it is justice. And this is a good example of how, you know, it does kind of suggest a certain shift in the thinking of Republicans. And it's in, you know, you're hearing some people kind of draw very broad conclusions from this, that the Republicans aren't the law and order party. I don't think that, you know, Republicans have really changed their values. They have kind of went to the question whether the current criminal justice system's let's say default settings are getting what they are. And when you come across a case of injustice, you have to take action to remedy it. What that ad doesn't even get into is that, look, that man was a convicted felon. They let him out on parole after initial evidence suggested he wasn't guilty of one of the rapes. There was another rape that did not have DNA evidence to kind of check it against. And so he still was considered a registered sex offender. Cuccinelli gave him a clerical job in the attorney general's office. And what Cuccinelli did was he led the fight to get the rest of that other conviction overturned and expunged from his record so that he could truly be a free man and not have this cloud hanging over him for his whole life. So it's a good ad. I think it's amazing. It even leaves out some of the stuff that Cuccinelli did. This is a story that he should be telling, and I think most of the reviews of this ad have been glowing, and they should be, because it's probably the first thing the Cuccinelli campaign has really done that really kind of breaks through the noise of this mudslinging negative campaign.
And now we move on to martini number two. And Jim, it didn't take long for the president on his foreign trip to make his way into the bad martini. The president was at a joint press conference with the prime minister of Sweden. I'll just let the questioner from the media ask the question, and then the president's response, followed by the president digging his hole even deeper.
Have you made up your mind whether to take action against Syria? Is a strike needed in order to preserve your credibility for when you set these sort of red lines?
Let me unpack the question. First of all, I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line. The world set a red line when governments representing 98% of the world's population said the use of chemical weapons are abhorrent and passed a treaty forbidding their use even when countries are engaged in war. Congress set a red line when it ratified that treaty. My credibility is not on the line. The international community's credibility is on the line. And America and Congress's credibility is on the line, because we give lip service to the notion that these international norms are important.
Jim, everybody's credibility is on the line, it seems, except his own.
There's a lot of incredulous disbelief in response to this statement. I myself put up the video of it. By the way, you cannot find the video of Obama making his original red line statement on the White House website, which I find kind of interesting and curious considering how that is the statement that has effectively set our Syria policy. And now he's saying that he didn't set it. Well, no, Mr. President, if you go and you look at the statement you made, you didn't say anything about the international community. There was no royal we or anything like that. It was pretty direct. It was that, you know, that this is, you know, this is my standard. This is what I said. This is, you know, I will take action. I will reevaluate. I will change my calculus, you know. Not it will change our calculus and all these things. Look, the world community has spoken on Syria. The world community's answer is, we're sorry to hear it, but we're not going to do anything about it. We can pretend it's otherwise, but look, France might be interested in doing something. Turkey might be interested in doing something, but most countries are not willing to commit to military action to punish a dictator for using chemical weapons on his own people. That is the reality of the world we live in. We can either deal with that reality and say, we think this is important enough, and we're going to take action in response to it, or we can just kind of pretend, oh, there really is an international community. We can talk about that giant classified coalition of the willing that Debbie Wasserman Schultz spoke about the other day, saying that, well, there are lots of countries that support us, but that information is classified. It sounds like a parody of an oblivious, out-of-touch lawmaker. I am someone who has believed that is a good and noble goal to punish a dictator for a barbaric act like this. Having said that, day by day, I'm growing less and less confident in the Obama's administration to actually do something. And I increasingly think we're going to get a bunch of cruise missiles for an entirely symbolic strike and not one that will actually punish him, which I think you can very much make the argument maybe is worse than doing nothing. Obama clearly has no confidence in his own policy. You kind of wonder if he's actually secretly hoping that the Congress will reject this, and so he'll be able to say he doesn't have to take action, that he doesn't have to do this, that he can say, well, I wanted to respond to Assad, but Congress wouldn't let me, and then kind of shrug and wash his hands of the whole thing. We are now seeing the true Barack Obama here, Greg, and those of us who've been skeptical from the beginning aren't really that surprised that his policies are an incoherent mess.
All right, on to martini number three now, and we stay with the making the case for military action in Syria. And Jim, if you ever wanted a coherent, concise case for why you should need military action, don't send John Kerry, Chuck Hagel, and Martin Dempsey up to Capitol Hill. And a very simple question of what's the size of the strength of the moderate Free Syrian Army? Chuck Hagel had absolutely no idea. Here is a Martin Dempsey simply being asked to explain what type of military action Congress is being asked to approve.
The answer to whether I support additional support for the moderate opposition is yes.
And this authorization will support those activities in addition to responding to the weapons of mass destruction.
I don't know how the resolution will evolve, but I support
that. What you're seeking. What is it you're seeking?
I can't answer that, what we're seeking.
So they don't know what they're seeking. And then John Kerry, as John Kerry is wont to do, gets his foot in his mouth talking about, well, we have no intention of putting boots on the ground, but I can envision some scenarios about putting boots on the ground. So Senator Corker, who you just heard there with Dempsey, didn't like that answer too much. And then Kerry just gets in even worse.
I didn't find that a very appropriate response regarding boots on the ground. And I do want to say that that's an important element to me.
Well, let me be very clear now, because I don't want anything coming out of this hearing that leaves any door open to any possibility. So let's shut that door now as tight as we can. All I did was raise a hypothetical question about some possibility, and I'm thinking out loud about how to protect America's interests.
Jim, I'm confident we have the right team in charge here.
Let me be clear. You don't see how obviously this phrase is catching. Now everybody in the administration is using it. I was just thinking out loud, under oath, before Congress, with the whole world watching, on matters of life and death and war. You cannot make this up, and you're kind of left incredulous by this, because you know, there were some really fair, good questions from Congress, from the senators up there that day. And what's interesting is you got the feeling that, you know, from there are a couple of folks, Democrats, you could tell were totally on board with this. McCain kind of surprised us this morning by saying he was not going to support the resolution because he thought it didn't go far enough. You listen to the Corkers of the world, you get the feeling that they might be open to this, but they have some very big questions that need to be answered. And basics like, so are we going to help the Syrian rebels? Like, are we trying to help the Syrian rebels? Do we know who the good guys are, who the bad guys are? At one point, during a really buddy-buddy moment between McCain and Kerry yesterday, McCain says, well, we know who the good guys are, right? And Kerry says, for the most part. Well, that's reassuring. So, like, if we give a whole bunch of arms to these guys, only like 25% of them are going to be hardcore Islamists or something. The other thing, you know, during the hearing yesterday, probably saw the picture of John McCain playing poker on his phone.
Yes.
While other folks were testifying. But at one point also yesterday, he says that the Islamists in the rebellion, the anti-Assad forces are mostly enforcing Sharia back far behind the lines. And if it's secularists who are fighting the good fight up against the Assad forces. Now, McCain's been there and I haven't, but that doesn't align with what I've been hearing. That is very difficult to figure out the motivations of all these different factions, and they're splintering and joining, and well, it's wartime, so there's the fog of war over everything. So I think our caution and skepticism about aiding the Syrian rebels is perfectly well founded. And then for, you know, Kerry to kind of say, well, we might put boots on the ground, but then again, we might not. Look, we said there'd be no boots on the ground in Libya, and then one of our pilots got shot down. Now, thankfully, there was a successful rescue operation. You saw kind of a similar situation in the Balkans. But if you think about it, there is no such thing as only an air war, because once you shoot down a pilot, that pilot is boots on the ground, and then you have to rescue him. And the rescue operation requires more folks on the ground. You do kind of wonder this very big question of, okay, we hit Assad, then Assad's going to do something, right? Assad's not just going to let this go with no response. So you wonder what those responses are going to be. They're probably going to be bad. They may be terrorist-related. They may include shooting at Israel. And then you wonder, well, what do we do then? More airstrikes? Bigger airstrikes? You know, like, it just kind of feels like there's several moves ahead that nobody's thinking of. And the idea, you know, the administration seems absolutely, totally insistent that this could never grow into a larger war between the U.S. and Syria. The problem is that once you start these military conflicts, they're not something you can, you know, just adjust with a dial knob and calibrate to exactly the level you want. The other thing which I've noted in the Morning Jolt today, and I really wish more people would beat up these guys over, is that, look, Kerry and Hagel and Pelosi and even Barack Obama just a couple of years ago were telling us that Assad was not such a bad guy. We should be establishing diplomatic relations with him. Obama said he'd be willing to meet with him. And now they're saying he's friggin' Hitler. It'd be nice to see some of these people saying, oh, by the way, when we were beating up the Bush administration, when we were calling Republicans a bunch of insane, crazed, warmongering lunatics who aren't giving Assad a fair shot, it'd be kind of nice for them to admit, oh, you know what? We were wrong, and the skeptics of Assad were right all along. And it's kind of ridiculous. The folks who botched that call so horribly are demanding the rest of us take their assurances on faith now. So. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, happy Rosh Hashanah. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great day, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.